Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We'll have Bobby Hurley, Arizona State head basketball coach, at 10:20 on the Final Four. He's been a part of them. Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist, at 10:35. And Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network is going to check in with us. Michael, I think on the fantasy front, because now the free agency is pretty much wrapped up, this is a day where the NFL is going to be front and center as the day progresses. So tracking down guys over at the owners meeting on a day when the vote is going down for the Raiders to move from Oakland to Vegas, not happening. So I'm going to talk about it. This is a very fluid story. Man, there's a lot going on here in the Valley. I think the NFL owners meeting is at the top of the list. But Devin Booker's performance on Friday night, I want to get into that. Of course, we have the Final Four. Lonzo Ball, I thought, took a bit of a hit against Kentucky. Archie Miller gets hired over at Indiana. So there's all sorts of things that are of interest. The Final Four, it's a field that on the surface, it's not going to draw a lot of big cheers from the fan who doesn't pay that close attention. I mean, Gonzaga, South Carolina, Oregon, North Carolina. Of those four, North Carolina is the one marquee program across the country. If you look at all four of these programs, is there one player that you look at and say, wow, this is battle of heavyweight? There is no Lonzo Ball. There is no Monk. There's, you know, go down the list of players that are no longer playing. Now, I think Dylan Brooks is terrific at Oregon, but I've seen him much of the season. I'm going to grow a beard like Carnoustie because I don't know if I'll get there until like 2020. But I like watching Gonzaga play. I really do. Frank Martin is fun to watch at South Carolina from a coaching standpoint. But anybody's going to sit here and break this down and say that they've watched South Carolina all season long and that this is what they expected. Because I read this morning that ESPN.com had 18 million ballots submitted in their brackets. Of those 18 million, 500 had these Final Four that remain, like 0.0002 or 3%. That these would be the Final Four. To me, having seen Oregon and then Oregon losing Chris Boucher, and I'll talk to Bobby Hurley about this, that's a surprise to me that Oregon was able to get this far. But when you have a horse like Dylan Brooks, and he is a horse, and Jordan Bell is doing things inside and blocking shots and getting boards and being a physical presence on the inside, you shouldn't be surprised. For the Zags, they hit their shots. Vegas has Gonzaga as the favorite to win this tournament. Who would have thought at the start of the season? And there's some things here locally. You know, Grand Canyon University aspires to be, since day one, they've aspired to be Gonzaga. Small little school, build the program around basketball, not around football. I'm wondering how Dan Marley feels about this. North Carolina, South Carolina coming here. I don't know how well they'll travel. I would think we would see a ton of blue. I know there's a bunch of Oregon fans that are around, but this isn't Oregon football. Do they gravitate on the basketball court as easily as they do on the football field? So the storylines of these four teams through the week, to me, it's terrific. I'm not one that needs to see UCLA and Duke and Michigan State and North Carolina over and over and over. I like to see some new faces. I like to see some new teams. I think it's great for West Coast basketball, as much abuse as it's taken through the years, to have two teams from the West that are out here. Obviously, the Cinderella South Carolina through all this. So we'll talk with Bobby Hurley, and we'll talk with Paula, too, because she's been covering quite a bit of it. Devin Booker scoring 70 points Friday night against Boston. So Friday night, I'm watching Kentucky and UCLA. And I flip over to the Suns game, and they're getting blown out, as always. And so I don't pay that close attention. Then on Twitter, I start to see the number for Booker grow. And then I flip over and start to watch a little bit more closely. And the first few things in my head are, okay, so he's getting touches every time. It's a good thing Alan Williams is out here because he's getting a lot of rebounds. There's no one else for the Suns that's doing anything. There's no one else shooting. It was only Barbosa and Chris that had double shot attempts in the game, and Chris was 1 of 10. So Devin Booker just decides to go put on a show, even though his team is getting crushed, even though his team is getting just punished all over the floor, they're in a back-to-back after getting drilled by Brooklyn. At the end of this game, you're not seeing it here, but at the end of this game, Earl Watson is actually fouling to get the ball back in possession so that Devin Booker could go for 70. And he's able to get the 70 points. So immediately, the crushing of the Suns starts. And I look at this story, and sure, Devin Booker did something that Michael Jordan never did. Michael Jordan scored 63. Okay, this is not in a playoff game. This is one of the worst teams in the NBA that Devin Booker is playing on, without a couple of their starters at minimum. And I was not impressed with Kobe Bryant's last game. Many people were. That's just me. If you jack up enough shots, you're going to get a lot of points. Was it cool to watch Kobe do it? At times, and then after a while, I was like, okay, so he's going to try to score 100 in his final game. Understand this, the Suns needed something, anything to take the attention off what a joke they are in the community with this team. They're better, but they're still a lottery team again. Those that sit here and write and talk about how they're close and how you have to go through this, you're just willing to push away the ineptitude of ownership in, I don't know, 2011, 2012, 2013, 14, 15, 16. Have they made progress this year? Sure. If Chris can stay out of foul trouble, which is hard for him to do, there are moments where he flashes brilliance. Moments. Devin Booker, does this take him to the next level? I don't know. The next night against Charlotte, he scored 23. Yesterday against Charlotte, he scored 23. Which, by the way, was a record for scoring the fewest points after scoring 70. Like, that matters to me. For some people, it's like, see, told you so. No, he put out a great effort. It was something that I looked at and said in the moment, okay, this is kind of fun to watch him do this because there's nothing else remotely interesting about this team. The night before, when they were in Brooklyn, they played the youngest starting five in the history of the NBA. So what other tricks can they pull out of the bag in the last 2 to 3 weeks? Whatever, mission accomplished. The highlight film guys now have plenty of film to show Devin Booker. There's going to be plenty of, can you believe this? There'll be plenty of Shazams, and rightly so. I would hope they'd use Al's call. But you can't hide what has been a train wreck of a season again. And I'm not going to sit here and rip Devin Booker for what happened the other night. It was what's gone on this season. This will be forgotten about, and in time they'll be, yeah, Devin Booker scored 70 in a game. Doesn't mean they're any closer to the playoffs. Doesn't mean they're any closer to being a very good basketball team. For one night, this guy jacked up a lot of shots. And good for him at 20 years of age. Not crushing him, but this doesn't change what's gone on here. The fact that they lost and he scored 70, and if you go through the numbers, I wrote about this over on sports360az.com. If you go through the numbers on this, it's not like Devin Booker didn't have some help along the way. You know, he did, and the coach made sure that he was able to get to this number. So that's what happened for the Suns. And then we have the NFL owners. So the NFL owners are in the Valley, started yesterday. And today's a landmark day in the National Football League. In all likelihood, before this day is done, the Oakland Raiders will become the Las Vegas Raiders. I would have never thought I'd sit behind a microphone and talk about an NFL franchise moving to Vegas. But after 30 plus years of doing this, in my view, times have changed. This isn't the worst thing. I do wonder, though, if the NFL in 5 years from now, what it's going to look like for the NFL when they decided to move the Rams out of St. Louis and move the Chargers out of San Diego and move the Raiders out of Oakland. So you move three franchises in the span of just over a year. What message are you sending to the rest of the cities that have franchises? We're not going to jerk around if you do not play our game. That's message number one. Message number two is Vegas really going to be a market? It's 48th, I believe, in television market size. So it's only 12 markets bigger than Tucson, to give you an idea of how small this market is. The Raiders relocation vote to Vegas will come down this afternoon. The owner of the Raiders, Mark Davis, needs just 24 votes. Las Vegas is the foreclosure capital of the United States. It's a very transient culture. So fans come and go, a little bit like Phoenix, a little bit like us, but we're a much bigger market, and I think we're more stable than where they are in Vegas. I think you look at this and say 2017 makes sense. You look at this 1997, maybe we were just naive and didn't know any better. So now the league is going to make this move, and that's going to be one of the biggest shots while they're here in town, but not the biggest potentially. You know, we're going to have conversation about rule changes. We're going to have conversation about Tony Romo and his future. There's going to be some conversation about why Colin Kaepernick cannot get a job. When you have players like Richard Sherman going public saying, Colin Kaepernick's one of the top 20 quarterbacks in the National Football League, whether you agree or disagree with him on that. So there's going to be some stories that come out while the owners are going through their spring meetings over at the Biltmore, and we'll have quite a bit of that. And, of course, the TV show Brad Sussmat Football AZ over on Fox AZ, we'll have a new edition of that tomorrow. That's about it. There was one interesting story just as we came on the air. Sean Miller decides to take himself off Twitter, shutting down his Twitter account. I am sure that what has happened here in the last few days since he ended up losing in the Sweet 16, that it hasn't been pretty on Twitter. Anybody can be a tough guy on Twitter, on social media. And Sean's announced that. For you U of A fans, I don't know what you make out of that. Do you take that as you have direct contact with your coach and now he doesn't want to see it any longer? Or is it just completely out of control and it's better for him to not focus on that stuff? So that came down today too. And his brother, of course, hired to be the head coach over at Indiana, Archie Miller. Word on that was, okay, so we talked about this last week. If Steve Alford leaves UCLA and goes to Indiana, that Earl Watson, Jay Williams said he believes that that would be the natural, Doug Gottlieb the same way, that the natural progression would be Earl Watson leaving the Suns to go to UCLA. The buyout of Steve Alford from UCLA was $8 million. It's a lot of dough. So if $8 million is standing in the way, and if Steve Alford doesn't feel as though that he's the only coach that Indiana was taking a look at, and there's some of that, maybe he was tied too closely to the Bobby Knight era and what Bobby Knight said a couple of weeks ago about administrators and dying and all that, then maybe it was just a little too close, a little too fresh, that this would be the right way for him to stay, and Indiana would go hire Archie Miller, who's a terrific coach. Archie Miller did a great job. He was an assistant here at ASU. People forget that. Up next, we'll talk with Bobby Hurley, head basketball coach over at Arizona State. Then we'll have Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. That's all straight ahead. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's turn our attention now to the Final Four. Bobby Hurley is with us, Arizona State Sun Devil head basketball coach. Final Four in Glendale, starting with Gonzaga and South Carolina, followed by Oregon and North Carolina. Coach, thanks for coming on board. How are you?
Pretty good, Brad. How are you?
I'm great. Good week ahead. A lot going on. Just general thoughts on these four schools coming into Glendale, Bobby.
Well, it should be a great event. It always is. An exciting atmosphere. I know the city's ready for it. And, we're going to have a lot of traffic, a lot of foot traffic here in the area for sure. And, some high-quality games, Gonzaga making their first appearance along with South Carolina, both fought extremely hard to get to this point, and Gonzaga's had a great year the entire season, and then you have Oregon and North Carolina that are two top programs the entire season, so it should be an exciting Final Four.
Biggest surprise to you of these four that's here?
I mean, it would probably be clearly, South Carolina just not from watching. I mean, they've earned it. They beat some really good teams. They just haven't been a household name this year. They've been a good team, but not at the elite top level and really playing well at the right time. And their coach, Frank Martin, has done a great job of getting his team to defend and play hard at that end of the floor to really creating turnovers and that's part of the reason they're in the Final Four.
Bobby Hurley with us. Frank Martin, do you know him at all, Bobby?
I've talked to him a few times in the recruiting on the road. I don't have a ton of history, with Frank, but just really enjoy how he gets after it. His intensity, his passion for coaching, how his players respond to him, and you could see how hard his team plays. That's the greatest thing that you could hope for is that you get your team, playing extremely hard and playing together, and that's kind of what I see when I watch South Carolina.
It's interesting because I think just in the first few days of now this all being set, he's the one coach, nothing against Coach Few or Coach Altman or Coach Williams, of course, but has really caught some fans' attention. I see that just in responses because he is so passionate about the game that he's got the Godfather look about him and all that stuff. So there is something about him.
Yeah, he's got a look during his games. So, when one of his players makes a mistake that he can look at you a certain way, and you're probably not going to want to make that mistake again out on the court. But I think he's probably developed and built those relationships with his players so that he can, be hard on them at times when he needs to be.
You're most familiar, of course, with Oregon coming into this Final Four. So I don't know if it's fair or unfair to ask you to match up styles, but I'll do it anyways. Gonzaga, South Carolina, what do you see if you're just X and O-ing it for Saturday?
I think that, if you're South Carolina, you try and speed the game up. You try and create and control the tempo of the game. That's going to be an important key for them to try and make it quicker. Get Gonzaga out of a half-court game as much as possible. Try and disrupt them on defense so that they can't throw the ball inside. I think that's where they would have, a pretty good advantage just looking at both teams. And then Gonzaga has a good plan how they run and execute offense. So I think it's going to be a chess match there. Who could control the pace of the game? Who, can South Carolina's pressure affect Gonzaga. In the other game, it's a little bit of the same. I think North Carolina is going to try and focus on throwing the ball inside also. They have, they're deep on the front court with really good size. And, Oregon is going to look to probably attack more off the dribble. And Dorsey has been great, for them at making big shots, going off the dribble and creating offense. And the same thing with Brooks. He's another guy that Oregon could go to, down the stretch in games. But I think it's going to be Jordan Bell is the guy that's going to, in that game with Carolina, going to really have to play the way he did against Kansas, just with his rebounding and shot blocking against that North Carolina front court.
Were you, we of course all saw Boucher go down up in Las Vegas. Are you surprised Oregon made it through to this point, having lost him?
Well, I mean, I completely understand the impact that Boucher has. He's, special with his shot blocking ability and his ability to stretch the court out, with his 3-point shot. So losing a guy like that, it's hard to completely replace a player like that. But, they have enough good players. They have enough talent. They have a good plan of how to use, what they have. So in some regards, initially people wrote them off in mm-hmm. terms of getting this far, but, not surprised, with where they are right now.
Bobby Hurley with us. Roy Williams, so when you have the other three coaches, there's a lot nationally being said that Roy Williams has the experience factor coming in here and having played on the big stage before and coached on the big stage before. Do you buy into any of that, or is that just filling notebooks before the Final Four?
Yeah, I mean, all these coaches are very experienced, have coached in the NCAA tournament, won games in the tournament, so it's this won't be, this will be their first Final Four experience, but all of these coaches have done it at a very high level. So I think that is a little bit overrated. Mm-hmm. I just think it's about getting your team focused. There's a lot going on here. There's a lot of distractions. It's an exciting environment. Get your team focused on winning a basketball game and not just being happy that you made it this far. It's so difficult to get to a Final Four. It's not easy. And, you know, your players should enjoy that moment. But, you know, after the weekend, it's time to move on, and I'm sure their coaches will get their teams refocused.
Before I let you go, a couple of items on your program. So you're playing Xavier next year, right?
That's a possibility. We're in a tournament in Las Vegas right around Thanksgiving. That's ourselves, Xavier, George Washington, and Kansas State. So it depends on how they set those matchups, and we won't know that yet for a while.
Yeah, and any other tournament teams that made it to, let's say, the Sweet 16 outside the Pac-12 that could be on your schedule next year?
Well, we've announced that, you know, we're going to do a home and home with Kansas, so we'll be on the road to Kansas this coming year, and then they'll return the game to Tempe the following year. So we're excited about that, you know, that home and home series. And then we play St. John's on a neutral court up in L.A. at the Staples Center. You know, that's another St. John's is a young team with some good talent, you know, Big East program. So we're excited to play that one as well. And then San Diego State, you know, they'll be coming here to Tempe. Those are the marquee names right now. We're continuing to finalize the schedule.
And your program, you don't lose much, but I mean, you lose a lot of scoring, but in terms of bodies, you don't lose much. How many do you have to give? Are you looking at fifth-year, senior, transfer guys? Bobby, give the fans a little idea about your offseason.
Yeah, we have to address our depth. It was, you know, I applauded our players for, you know, for playing the minutes they played and to sacrifice the way they did, some guys playing out of position. And, you know, it taught me a different way to play, you know, with smaller lineups. But, you know, we have to do a good job making sure that we have the necessary depth and size to compete. So that's been the major priority. We've been focusing on that with our with recruiting. You know, we have a good class set. We have Kamani Lawrence, a 6'7" wing from Rhode Island, that's a top 50 player. Remy Martin, one of the best point guards on the West Coast,
terrific player, yeah.
A senior from LA, and so exciting to add him. And then, you know, Romello White, 6'9" forward, who's a top 75 player as a senior in high school, sitting out this year, so we'll have him. And Mickey Mitchell is another transfer that's been very impressive from Ohio State, 6'7". So we're adding, you know, size to our front court, and that's been a, you know, a high priority for us.
Appreciate the time and insight as always, Bobby. Thanks.
No problem, Brad. Take care.
Take care. This is Bobby Hurley with us, head coach over at Arizona State. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. More on the tournament with Paula Bovin. Michael Fabiano later on in the show, and of course this week, busy week with the NFL owners meetings in town, opening day for the Diamondbacks on Sunday, the Final Four, so a lot to get to, and we're back with more after this timeout.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories, it's time for News and Notes with AZ Central Sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmat.
News and Notes, Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports columnist. In a busy, busy week, we have the NFL owners meetings over at the Biltmore with the Raiders move. Bruce Arians will talk on Wednesday. A lot of rule changes. We have the Diamondbacks season opener on Sunday. And, of course, the Final Four is in place. But I do want to start and get Paula's view on Devin Booker scoring 70 points Friday night. Nationally, it was a big story. And nationally, Earl Watson was getting ripped because he was fouling intentionally in the final few moments to get Devin Booker 70. The fact that they lost the game, the fact they have one of the worst records in the league. Where do you come down on Devin Booker scoring 70 points in a game?
You know, I didn't have a huge problem with it, Brad. I mean, for most of those points, that could easily have been solved by the Celtics stopping him. You know, if you don't like it, do something about it. I mean, I thought that was the majority of the game. The fouling at the end, it was, you know, I mean, is it great for the game? No, but I think if you look at where the Suns are, that it was only a small part of the game, that this is a team trying to sort of, you know, gather a little momentum. It didn't bother me. I guess I could understand maybe nationally some people had an issue with it, but it really didn't bother me.
The fact that they lost the game, does it take away from what Devin Booker did?
No, I mean, you know, they're losing just about every game. So I just, to me, that that doesn't matter. I mean, their season is done. They're getting players ready for next season. They're trying to build some excitement and momentum in this community. And again, a lot of those points, if the Celtics didn't like it, well, you know what? Do something about it. Don't let him score those points. It wasn't all about fouling at the end. So
what'll be interesting to see is when they come back off this trip, they play at Atlanta tomorrow night. Will they try to do the same thing? Because, look, if Eric Bledsoe's playing still, there's not a chance that Devin Booker gets that many shots, in my view.
Right.
And so that's one. Two, do you try to do that intentionally here at home? Because to your point, they are trying to create buzz and interest. I think they did some of that last week by starting the youngest lineup in the history of the NBA. And then the next night, Devin Booker scores 70. So in what's just been an absolute embarrassing train wreck of a season, the guys that are making the highlight film actually now have a few things to stick in it. And
right.
And so do they intentionally go out of their way to try to get him to score a 50 or 60 a game? Do you want to see that?
No, you know what? I mean, I understand how it kind of unfolded in this game, and that's fine. But then it just gets ridiculous to me. Then it gets to be overkill. Then I think opponents and fans have a gripe. I don't think it's something you want to approach all the time. I think mm-hmm. this is sort of a unique situation just with how it unfolded. But, yeah, no, you don't want to kind of keep going in that direction. No way.
Talking News and Notes, Paula Bovinese, Central Sports columnist. How much criticism does Sean Miller – that's a bad question. I hate it when people say that.
Mm-hmm.
The criticism of Sean Miller, is it unfair – of Sean Miller to be criticized for having a Sweet 16 exit?
No, I think it's fair. I think there has to be some context, though. You know, I mean, I was there. I listened to Sean Miller at his press conference. He was legitimately putting it on himself after mm-hmm. the game. And I tend in my field not to go too hard on coaches about strategy because, my goodness, you know, they're the ones watching film. They're the ones that have been in this business. There's certain things I will criticize and certain I won't. But this one, I felt it was okay to go there because a lot of it was about, I think, just what his team became in the last few minutes. You know, like they were tight, like some guys didn't want the ball, some of the decision-making. And Sean Miller himself was saying there he's got to figure out kind of what's going on and put it on himself. And, you know, maybe it's a leadership issue. Maybe he has the wrong kind of players. So I did agree with him that some blame goes on him. But the context, Brad, of this situation important. He's not a bad coach. He's a coach who had a bad day. I mean, I think there's a big distinction with those two things. And to me, it was the latter. He had a bad game.
Okay.
But do you want to fire him? Of course not. But you just hope next time he does better.
Okay, so the fact that Xavier got stomped by Gonzaga, does that make the loss that much worse in your view?
Well, you know, I've been a huge person who's been hugely impressed with Gonzaga all season. I mean, I've watched a lot of them this year, so I wasn't mm-hmm. surprised. But, yeah, I mean, it shows you. And, you know, this is Gonzaga is a mature team that tends to be their MOs, experienced guys. They are obviously well coached by Mark Few. So, they were better prepared. But, again, I think some of those things have to go – those things go to leadership. Do you have the right leaders on the floor? You know, sometimes I wonder, are Arizona players feeding off kind of Miller's emotion sometime on the sidelines? I mean, I think he does a good job for the most part of containing him, but sometimes we've seen that face, right, of Miller where it's just so worked up. I don't know. I think those are questions he has to ask. So, sure, I think the way Gonzaga handled Xavier didn't help the argument in any shape or form.
I think in Sean Miller's case, Paula, he's done the same job as John Calipari in a very smart way, and that is it's all about the players getting them to the next level. So John Calipari can lose at Kentucky over and over and over, but it's about how many guys is he going to get drafted and send to the league. Sean Miller cannot go to a Final Four ever, but it is a player's program on their Twitter handle. It is about the players first and foremost. And Sean can show and demonstrate that he's been able to get Aaron Gordon and Stanley Johnson and down the list of U of A players in for a one and done or 2 years in some cases. And they're able to go on to the next level. Thus, he's not facing the same criticism of a guy that it is about winning a championship. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I think, but the other part of the piece of that puzzle, too, I think we need to mention is that there have been many great coaches who have gone through what Sean Miller has gone through, and then you win. It just takes time, and, you know, patience is not a virtue by any of the fans that I know. You know, they don't support that cause, but the reality is it may not come as fast, but it will. I mean, if anyone, you know, is a self-analyst more than Sean Miller, I don't know. I know he's always scrutinizing the job he has done and things like that.
It's hard for him to, I think, Paul, it's going to be hard for him to do it if he just builds his base off one and dones. Or guys that show up and then transfer out to us, or don't even make it. They leave the program, go to Australia because they don't get in. I mean, he's going after the five-star guys. And with that, you're going to have very little margin to build a program. You've got to just get it done in one season.
Well, yeah, it's tricky. I think back to T.J. McConnell, and, you know, he was a transfer, but you think of the value of having a senior like him at point guard who, you know, early on in his career, people weren't overly excited about. But that leadership I thought he provided to Arizona during their postseasons and the season, I mean, that stuff was valuable. So, yeah, it's something I think that he will probably analyze, the makeup of the team, the, you know, the experience factor and all that. But, you know, if you can get a five-star recruit, are you going to say no to him? No, of course not.
I don't know. Lonzo Ball, did his stock take a hit in your view?
You know what? I don't think so. I mean, I think with all these players, you've got to measure their body of work and not sort of a single snapshot. And there is no question he's a tremendous player, and I love his poise. I mean, his expression really doesn't change during the course of a game. And
right.
No, I don't, you know, sometimes things happen, matchups happen. A guy is allowed to have a bad moment, a bad game, something like that. It certainly didn't change in my book.
All right. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always.
Okay,
thanks. It's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now Michael Fabiano with us, the Hall of Famer, NFL Network senior fantasy analyst. With the NFL meetings going on, we felt as though it's time to go through free agency because most of the big names were actually just waiting for Josh McCown to land. And then it was time to get Michael on the show, right? You were waiting, too, on that one.
You know, and I was dead wrong, too. I thought Jay Cutler was going to the Jets all day long.
Yeah.
So the fact that Josh McCown is a Jet and could potentially make pretty good money depending on incentives. How does Cutler have to feel right now? Or Colin Kaepernick at this point? I mean, Josh McCown is at least, it looks like he's got a starting job locked up with the Jets, and these guys are still on the market.
At least Brock Osweiler's on a roster, right?
I mean, well, I mean,
for now.
Unless you're a Browns fan, you know, I mean, that's good news, right? No one's going to be drafting Brock Osweiler in fantasy leagues, that's
no,
for sure.
That's for darn sure. All right.
Yeah.
So now that free agency has most of the dust, if not all the dust, is settled, I think there's still some shoes to drop with Romo.
Yep.
But Martellus Bennett, Green Bay, Eddie Lacy, Brandon Marshall, Pryor, Jackson. The winners, the losers in free agency for fantasy fans, Michael.
I was a bit harsh. There were more losers than winners to me. Martellus Bennett's a winner. You mentioned him. You go from Tom Brady to Aaron Rodgers. That's not bad. Lateral move there, and the offense is one of the best in the league. So Bennett's right up there in the top 10 at tight end. Eddie Lacy, now see, okay, maybe it's because over the last 2 years I've become soured on this guy.
Right.
His yards per carry average is still very good. His yards after contact numbers are still very good. But you got to be on the field. And there's reports that this guy's close to 270. Okay, that's not fantasy points. That's pounds. And you've also got Thomas Rawls in Seattle. You've also got C.J. Procise in Seattle. And I refuse to believe both of these guys are going away completely. Rawls will play a complementary role. C.J. Procise will be a third down back, a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. And he was pretty effective last year in his rookie season. So I say Eddie Lacy is a loser in this because I don't think he can reclaim his RB1 form. I have him ranked as an RB2, and I have him probably as a fourth or fifth round pick. To me, the biggest winner is Terrell Pryor, because Pryor goes from the Browns, where I believe he had six quarterbacks last year, including himself, at least six players that threw a pass. The Browns were one of the worst teams in the league in terms of pass offense. You go to Washington, where the team lost 36% of their targets in DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon. So there's a lot of opportunities. Jay Gruden loves to throw the football. And Kirk Cousins, I believe the Redskins averaged the third most passing yards per game last year. He's also, for all intents and purposes, in a contract year, so he's singing for his supper again. So Pryor is a big winner in the free agent movement. In terms of Brandon Marshall, I have him as a winner for one reason. He's not catching passes from Jets quarterbacks anymore, so that's a good thing. He's never going to be the 2015 version. That was a great season, but it won't happen again. Of course, Odell Beckham Jr. is now the featured wide receiver and has been since he's come into the league for the G-men, so Marshall will play a secondary role. With that being said, very good red zone threat. The Giants ran more three wide receiver sets than any team in the league last year, so there should be opportunities for him to be a wide receiver three in that area. The bad news, Sterling Shepard, to me, his value goes down.
Mm. You know, we're talking with Michael Fabiano. So Brandon Cooks, we haven't brought up his name. And
yep.
And you look at that on the surface and you would say of all the moves, at least to me, it's wow, that one just struck me right between the eyes. Because, you know, Eddie Lacy, he has no offensive line and he hasn't learned two important words. I'm full. So what, you know, so you
well
look
played,
at
Brad.
No, but if you look at that, Michael, I think that Cooks is one that people are not really giving enough attention to. Am I wrong on that?
You know, to be quite honest with you, from a fantasy standpoint,
yeah.
I think this is a lateral move at best. Because, all right, so you're in New Orleans, you're in a dome, your biggest asset physically is your speed, and he was in a perfect situation. I'll give you a stat here. It's a small sample size, okay?
Sure.
He's averaged just 9 fantasy points a game with 4 touchdowns in 10 career outdoor games, compared to over 11 fantasy points a game and 13 touchdowns inside a dome. Now, most of his games have been inside a dome because he played in New Orleans, and
right.
They also played the Atlanta Falcons. So it's a small sample size. I understand that. But also keep in mind, this guy has not played a lot of football, at least at the pro level, in cold conditions. He's going to New England. Great news for Tom Brady. But let me give you the list of options that Brady has now, okay? Brandon Cooks, Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Dwayne Allen, I'm not done, Deion Lewis, mm-hmm. James White, and now Rex Burkhead. That's a lot of mouths to feed in that offense. Cooks, to me, is a – if you're in a 12-team league, he's probably a low one. In a 10-team league, he's probably a high two. But I can't see him putting up 1,200 yards and 9 touchdowns in that offense unless – Gronkowski gets hurt, unless there's injuries. Because Julian Edelman has got a great rapport with Tom Brady. He's still going to see some targets. He's not going to see 160, but there's just a lot of mouths to feed in that offense now. So while I do like the fact that he's going from Breeze to Brady, you don't lose the quarterback position. I don't like that he's going from predominantly domes to more outdoor games. And I don't like the fact that the Patriots have so many weapons in that offense. And this is not one of those teams, and maybe this is why they've been so successful, they're not going to get the ball to any certain guy more often than not, outside of Gronkowski probably in the red zone, because this is a team that's all about winning, and Cooks is going to go in knowing that. And if he complained about not getting enough targets last year in New England, in New Orleans, he better not do that in New England because he'll find his way to the bench. With that being said, I still say he's a top 30 pick.
All right. A couple other questions, I'll let you go. So Adrian Peterson, landing spot from a fantasy football standpoint, you're like, wow, this would be great for him and for mm-hmm. fantasy, or those days are just done for Adrian Peterson in your view?
Those days are just done for Adrian Peterson. That was my best Brad Sesmat impersonation.
There you
it was
go.
Bad. I'm nasally. I got a cold. I think everyone on the West Coast has a cold right now. he's not the same back anymore. He hasn't been. I mean, he had that huge year a couple of years ago, but two of the last 3 years, he hasn't been on the field very much.
Right.
One for suspension, one for injury. And I think in terms of storyline, it would be great to see him go to the Green Bay Packers. Do the reverse Brett Favre and try to stick it to the Vikings. But I don't know that anyone's going to pay him what he wants. And this is a very deep running back class coming in. So teams are not going to go out and pay Adrian Peterson a lot of money when they can potentially fill a void in their backfield with a rookie. So we'll see what happens. Green Bay would be a spot. The Raiders would be a spot, although I would love to see Marshawn Lynch come back. That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
The Oakland guy goes to the Raiders, and I'd rather have Marshawn Lynch on my fantasy team than Adrian Peterson. There's not a lot of landing spots where Peterson can come in and make an impact. And even if he does come in and start someplace, risk-reward, my friend, risk-reward.
Okay, month away from the NFL draft, what rookie do you look at and say, this kid's going to come in and make an impact in a big way?
You know what? You can never say that unless you know where a player is going to be. Fournette has got a great shot to be a very good back. If he ends up in Carolina, for example, it may be delayed a little bit because they've got Jonathan Stewart there, and I don't see a situation where Fournette completely takes over that job. If he lands in Jacksonville, well, you've got Chris Ivory there. You've got T.J. Yeldon there. If he lands with the Jets, you've got Matt Forte there. So it all really depends on where you land. Last year, it was the best of both worlds, right? The best running back in the draft class ended up in the best situation in the league, and boom, Ezekiel Elliott is now a top three pick, assuming nothing happens with his off-the-field antics, which, not very mature. But the bottom line here is that there's a lot of good running backs, and if they end up in the right spots, say the Raiders don't get Marshawn Lynch, and they draft a running back who could end up potentially being their starter, that's going to have an impact from a fantasy standpoint. If Dalvin Cook ends up, say, with the Redskins, okay, and he's got a shot to knock Rob Kelly right out of that starting job, which I believe he would, well, you know, Dalvin could have more value than Fournette. We'll see what happens. It's different than evaluating talent at a scouting combine or at a pro day. Fantasy is all about talent plus opportunity.
Right.
Because if you don't have the opportunity, if you remember, when Steven Jackson was drafted by the St. Louis Rams, he was the best running back in that class by a mile. Didn't do anything in his rookie year because Marshall Faulk was there. It wasn't only until the next season when Marshall retired that Jackson came in and did really well and produced for fantasy owners. So this class has got a lot of potential. It could end up being more in the long term from a fantasy standpoint, and it probably will, but that's why you need to watch the draft and see where these guys end up, because if there's an opportunity to be the guy, that is likely going to be a player who you'll either see listed as the top rookie, and it probably will be a running back, or this year's Jordan Howard, in quotes, let's put it that way, a guy who got drafted late, who ended up on a team where the opportunity was going to present itself, and he took and ran with it.
Yeah, you know, it worked out. No, it makes sense. Hey, good stuff as always. Appreciate the time and insight. Thanks, pal.
All right, pal. Take care.
Here's Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network. Always good to catch up with the Hall of Famer. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now that you can check out. Sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona-centric. Throw some national stuff in there, too. Yeah, we talk fantasy. We do that during the regular season, but always good to catch up with the Hall of Famer. Thanks again to Bobby Hurley and Paula Bovin. I want to thank our sponsors. Please support them. They support us. Our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything, and Edwin Rodriguez overlooked the shoulder of Jared today. His support. Thanks for being with us.